Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. We are still live at the Tennessee Dental Association meeting here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I am super excited about our next guest. Also, welcome to our Facebook Live crew. Thanks for joining in and seeing this event here live. ADA President, Dr. Joe Crowley. Doc, thanks for being a part.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is a real treat. I'm glad you're here. Talk about kind of what you're doing, why you're here in Tennessee, and we'll kind of just see where the conversation takes us.
I obviously, part of my role is to be the spokesperson for the American Dental Association, and we try to reach out to our societies, our component societies, constituent societies, any chance we can. Also, when I'm in a city that has a dental school, we try to do a little bit of a reach out, connect with them, and we just had a nice meeting with the dean and some of the staff from Meharry.
Yeah.
We're working very closely with Meharry to try and see if we can't dive into a little deeper the issue of diversity in dentistry and how we can increase the diverse population, underrepresented population in our profession.
And they have a phenomenal group of students there right now. Yeah. It's really, really, and I've had the being here and being the, so I'm the new dentist. I'm like, you're the highest man on the totem pole. I'm like the lowest man on the totem pole, but I'm the new dentist representative for the TDA in Nashville. And so my job is working with Meharry, and it has been unbelievably fun to see what they're doing and their passion for organized dentistry and for trying to get lobby days organized and whatnot. So that group specifically is doing a lot of cool things.
I was able to meet with them last spring, and I was engaged by kind of work they're doing, what they're trying to do, and the reach out they're making. And I just thought that it was a perfect time for us to be able to be part of that because the role models they have there and things are just outstanding. And I thought we could add some ADA influence to help move that story at a bigger level.
No, for sure. I was not near that motivated as they were in dental school. I know, right?
It is amazing, isn't it?
Tell me about this, Doc. As we jump into this, how did you get to be a part of where you're at now and being the president and being an organized dentistry? Yeah. Tell me a little about your dental career, if you don't mind, for the listeners.
So I've practiced general dentistry in Cincinnati for 41 years.
Wow.
The last 18 months, I have been basically out of practice because of my job as president-elect and then president of the American Dental Association requires, it's a full-time job.
Sure.
So I did sell my practice to a young man that is just dynamic. In fact, he did a GPR program here in Nashville.
No way.
And very great program that he went through. And he's about 8 years out of dental school, 9 years now. And it was a perfect time for me. And he was the perfect person. I'm employed by him now, but he could fire me. I never show up.
So, it would probably be in his best interest to keep you on.
I got that going for me for a little
while. Yes, for at least a little bit longer.
You know, when I was young, as a dentist, I came out, started a practice. I also worked in a school-based clinic at the time, which just showed me a lot of where we're trying to go today with outreach and access issues. But I got involved because a friend of mine happened to be the mayor of Cincinnati. He was a patient. And one day, the executive director of the Cincinnati Society said, "You know the mayor. Could you get him to come and talk?"
No way.
And luckily, he did that for me. And then they just kept asking me other things, and I just didn't know how to say no. So the engagement at a very early part of my career just kind of enamored me.
Sure.
And so I just did what I was supposed to do step by step by step without any goal ever of being a president of my local or my state or
But
it just kept working. I really liked being on the front end of what was happening in our profession.
Sure.
From 1976 when I graduated to today, there are been some major changes, some major relooks on where we as a profession need to be. And I just loved being on the front end of that knowledge and then being with people who could fill me with more and knew what was going on. And so just staying involved
or
made
sense. Even having the opportunity to influence the way that those decisions were being made.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty cool place. And you know, it's a work in progress, but you're right. dentistry has a role in influencing what happens to our profession. And I believe that that's one of the goals of the American Dental Association, to make sure that we put our members in the knowledgeable place to know that they're the profession. The young, the millennials, you're the 100% of our future.
Sure.
And so dictating where we're going to be that profession 10, 20 years from now, is critically being formed right now. So
talk a little bit about that, because we were talking off air a little bit about just the dynamics that are changing. I mean, I think it's no secret to anybody that attendance is down at meetings, that involvement with a lot of organized dentistry and whatnot is decreasing. And a lot of that is our fault, or I don't even know if it's our fault as millennials, is it is just there's some sort of transit that's shifting, or lack of communication, or I don't know what it is, but it does seem to be decreasing. Talk about that.
Yeah, I will start with saying that I believe it's the American Dental Association's responsibility to be the value proposition that a person would want to belong. I also know that the ADA does so many things that even some of the members my age have no concept of what 100%. We're doing and how much value it is and how the profession is treated in this country today. And I think that that's critical work that we do. For some reason, our message doesn't seem to resonate with the younger people for multiple reasons. You talk about communication. Obviously, the digital world, the 24/7 cycles have changed a lot. Also, the busyness of a lifestyle today seems different than when I was a kid.
Sure. You know?
And so there's so many things that are attracting the younger people today to stay engaged with. Take that into dentistry. There's so many avenues now for you as a young dentist, through podcasts, through study clubs. I see you are part of the Spear group.
Yep. And yes, sir.
Andy, my boss back home in Cincinnati, is deeply engaged in the Spear study groups. I saw Frank Spear when I was young as a CE class where you were hands-on.
That's
there.
Awesome.
And it's amazing. The guy and what they do and what they stand for is excellence in dentistry. That's where we believe as a profession, through science and evidence. That's how we are going to stay the profession we are. How do we engage younger people today? We need to come up with some value proposition. We need to be able to communicate the way you want to get it. You know, I've often did say, you know, I'm a leader. I've always been a leader. I've often said to my peers and dentists, you know, you don't have to be a leader to be a belong, but
sure.
Belonging helps us influence the society. It helps us influence the legislators. By belonging to our organization, just in mass, it makes us a stronger
100%.
Place. And so why I struggle sometimes, why a younger dentist might say, well, I don't want to belong. And a lot of times cost is given as the reason. I don't want to belong because
cost
too much.
I mean, cost to me tends to be a crappy reason, you know, frankly. I mean, to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's ways that we can, it's not like it's one check, right? I mean, we can do payments and there's ways to make the cost break down to make more sense, right?
State by state, that is happening. Our membership hierarchy is very, very difficult. We're working very hard now to try to simplify that so that is a one button simplification to join and stay in and make it spread out so it's not a one time check. And then the challenge is to show people that the value that they get for that money far exceeds if you just use some of the products that are available that we all
you're
need
getting
in our
discounts
life.
And that thing,
you're going to save that dues money just like that. So trying to get that message out there, I think, is critical on our part that we have to do that.
So basically, and you were saying we see a large group of people in ASDA. I mean, ASDA to me is they're doing it seems to be that there's a really good. I would argue. I went to the ASDA District 4 in North Carolina event this year, and I was unbelieved by the engagement.
Yeah,
because I think our generation, honestly, what we do have going for us is we're very passionate.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to if we see something that we believe in, we want to run in that direction, right? I mean, it's like those Meharry students I've seen. They really, like, their interest in lobbying and being involved blows my mind from where I was when I was a dental student, right?
Yeah.
So I do think it's important to somehow articulate and allow them to grasp on to the vision that I think aligns very well with our vision without them getting stopped by the cost and whatnot.
And being part of the solution, you know, a little side story to this, I go to a lot of dental schools, and it's one of my favorite things that I do is as president-elect and then now president. And I've learned, it's funny, the dental students will say they don't like to be lumped into the millennials. Well, obviously, you're not afraid of it. You have.
I figure we might as well own it.
And I step back and say, there are some traits that the millennials have, that dental students have, that I wish the whole world would have. They're caring, you know, your outreach, the ability to be engaged in things. Those are traits that we all should have. Now, how can I help you harness those traits to be better? Today's profession, being much more integrated into healthcare, much more integrated into work with our physicians and other healthcare providers to provide oral health as part of somebody's total health. That is a new world out there.
Sure.
We used to be a side story. Dentistry was a side story. No. And you know what? It was a good side story for many people of the past. But that game is changing. The millennials are being taught that way. And to me, that opens a door beyond anything that I ever in my career saw. So
I mean, we're gonna be playing a much bigger role in the systemic healthcare of everybody.
And that I tell the young people, the new golden era of dentistry might just be coming upon us, not in the past, because of how we are being respected. So let's go back to that. As does almost 100% of the students in America are part of organized dentistry.
Yeah,
they come out of school, we've got them, and then over the next 3 to 5 years, they trickle away almost at a rate of 50% that they trickle away. And the question is, why is that? And you've given me permission to say, well, it's not just the cost. So
I agree.
So how do we help young people believe that being involved in this can change the story?
So the two things I think is, one, unfortunately, I don't know why, but it seems that we want to blame, and I say we as more of just the dentistry as a whole,
yeah.
We want to blame the ADA for every negative that happens or everything that doesn't go our way or in the industry, in the news or whatever, that like, why aren't we lobbying for this? Or why is this happening? Or like, does that make sense? Like the things that are getting infringed on our benefits, we want to, we don't want to give y'all credit for any of the good stuff. Mm-hmm. We just want to blame you for all the things that aren't going wrong. So I think part of that is we probably need to do a better job of celebrating the victories and posturing them across, you know, to where people can see. My question to you to kind of flip that back is, this is a platform of we are the, you know, graduating in 2011, 13, 14 that are coming to graduate in the next 4 years and 5 years and whatnot. Where do you see the true value is for membership in the ADA? You know, what is it that you said, you know what, these are the things I want young dentists to kind of carry as the torch for why it's important for me to invest my time, money, and energy into why do I want to believe in it so much?
There's so much of what we do is affected by legislation and rules. And the voice that we have as dentistry representing, you know, 65, 70% of the dentists in the country is a powerful voice when you come in numbers. People tend to listen if you're representing a large group of people. So there's so many things that are happening today with regulatory issues. We just recently had a success at keeping dentistry from having to join Medicare, even though there's no benefit there. Those are successes that we have lobbied for. And when you lobby with big numbers and saying, this is who we represent,
it's huge.
And in fact, our director at the Washington office was in front of Congress one time and somebody said, the dentist, you represent 70%. Medicine is at 17%. What's the difference? How are you so powerful? And yet that's starting to whittle away a year at a time or less and less and less engaged. And it's the millennials who are not joining in the same numbers.
Do you think that that's a big reason why dentistry has kind of stayed isolated in the way it is and the way we practice is because of that sect compared to medicine?
Or, that's a big question. You know, there's the economic factors of all that,
sure.
How medicine was taken up. Now you notice there's almost no private practice medicine anymore. They're large
hospital groups.
And that was all driven through third-party paying and how they pay for healthcare. Dentistry had stayed isolated from that. But more and more and more,
we're seeing a shift to that.
The third-party look and how they're looking and how dentists are going to be paid in the future. Some of those things are changing. So we have to be there as a voice to say, you know, there are some things that have to happen. A perfect example is this access to care issue. In 2000, the Surgeon General had an oral health report, the first one ever. And it recognized the dental problems that are out there in society and in our citizenry, and how many people aren't getting access to care.
Right.
Well, it got dumped in dentist's lap. It became our fault, nobody else's. Nobody else came to the table.
Yeah.
But we're lobbying every single day to say, somebody's got to help us. Our member dentists are doing a great job, but they can't do it in an economic system that's failing us. So we lobby that. And if we lobby from numbers, just think if we lobbied from only representing 35% or 40% versus representing 70%.
100%. That's huge.
Or it's a big world. And, you know, unfortunately, the good things we do, whether you're a member or not a member, you benefit from it in this country. So I'd rather participate. Now, we've got some new things we're looking at. There's a program that we're developing now that really it's evolved and pivoted into something bigger than we ever thought. And it has to do with connecting younger dentists with the older dentists. So mentor is always, it's an overused term, but the connectivity to be on the same page, to be looking at things, to be helping with not only quality of care, but the quality of life that happens for everybody,
right,
the dentist and the people we provide
right
care for. And this match program where people will come to meet somebody who is a lot like them, thinking like them, but they might be in a rural setting and have a very prolific economic practice, but they are closing the doors because they can't sell it because we are having trouble moving dentists into areas like that.
Because all our generation wants to be in the metropolitan areas, right?
And so what happens there is the people who are looking at this saying, see, the dentist won't do it, are creating a whole nother story around a different workforce model and stuff. It's funny, economically, I don't think that workforce model really is a solution.
No, I agree.
But
it's the same reason that you say, well, if we're not getting dentists to go in these rural areas, well, we should increase more dentists in the dental schools.
Yeah.
Right? Well, all that does is just now we have more dentists wanting to go to the cities.
Yeah.
That's
and
solution.
And yet there are plenty of people who are also saying that there are too many dentists.
Right.
So there's a mix. I don't believe there are too many dentists. I believe the distribution has to change.
Sure, 100%.
So there has to be incentives to want to do that. This program we're working on will incentivize whether it's a single person in a single practice or multiple people moving and becoming a community of a group practice. That's one of the other things we know about millennials. They have learned working together. They have learned in collaboration. And now that practice model with small groups is going to be a much, much bigger, better way to do this, to stay collaborative. That's going to be our connect back to medicine. So the collaboration around this story is big and bold.
Well, I love that because I would argue that's a big, I think that's a big problem that we're missing a lot of right now is in partnership, mentorship, whatever word you want to use. I think that's a big piece that's missing, that's opened the door for a lot of other, you know, industries or not industries or corporations or whatever you want to call it, moving into dentistry, is this lack of transitioning. We've done a very poor job in our profession of kind of the traditional model of, like, you know, you're taught, you teach, trickle down effect of transitioning and mentorship. And that's really, unfortunately, been lost. I don't know why that is.
You know, it's interesting because I've been observing you now for the morning, going by watching. I sat over and watched you engage. And the number of people that are coming by your desk aren't just millennials. They're the guys my age, and they're engaging. Dentists my age want to learn as much from you as you want to learn from them. And that communication gap, and that's what we found in all of our work that we did to put this study together, was that wanting to belong together with like peers, to share knowledge and to learn more and learn a different way. You know, it might sound corny that you can learn every day, but you can learn every day.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And that's the story of this new model that might really help.
I think that's awesome.
The ultimate outcome might be that one or two or three people might look and say, well, we can go into that community. We can have a prolific practice in an area where we become part of the society. Dentistry brings almost $1.8 million. The dental practice brings that to the economy.
Wow.
With the workers, with who they do, the taxes they pay. And so small communities want to have dentists. They become power leaders in these communities. And, you know, sometimes that's not a bad place to be. You just got to, you know, I get it that you don't want to live 800 miles out in the hinterland. I have some good friends that do
still,
that. They hunt and fish. And they're loving it. You know?
No, I'm right there with you. I don't know. I don't know how much you know about. So I work with my dad. Okay, cool. I'm beyond fortunate and blessed to, part of the reason I get to do what I do and do all this is because of that mentorship and that, and what I've gained from him. I mean, we joke all the time that really, I think you hit the nail on the head of, we really should never stop learning. When we did our transaction of me coming into the practice, that we had a gentleman who said, he goes, the biggest problem between, your dad's generation and you working together is they have an ego problem and you have an entitlement problem. And I thought that hits, and dad and I joke about that all the time, because at the end of the day, I have to realize that I am stupid not to lean on 30 years, 40 years of experience. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you've been through, you know, what happens when you do this? What happens when an employee does this? How do you do this situation? Why am I trying to reinvent the wheel? Yet he has to be open to the idea that I have new ideas, new energy, technology changing. How do we work in a social media world? That the combination of both working together in a together vision is very dangerous. Like, it's a dynamite duo, you know?
I stayed up on technology. I always thought that was my responsibility.
Right.
So when Andy bought the practice, he didn't have to reinvent that whole world. I was left-handed. I had 3 years ago, I put new equipment in knowing that I was going to have to make it ambidextrous. So I was planning, not for Andy at this point, but he is dynamic. But to your point, so I have all the technology there. I'm cruising. He comes in, and with a very brief time, the staff stayed. They love him. Their eyes are open that there are different ways of doing things.
Sure.
And Andy brings technology of communication things to a level that I never had. And it's just amazing what has happened.
That's awesome.
It's a little embarrassing what he's done with my practice and took it to another level.
No.
It's like, oh my gosh. But it's pretty special. And those are some of the things. In fact, this new program, not only the match, but we're hoping to have in it the training necessary. If some young people in dental school, we don't get much business training. That's still,
right.
There's not enough time, but we're going to have the ability to help young people come in and maybe do their back office work for them while they're engaged
cool.
and getting better in dentistry so that they can come out and maybe find that situation is as good as maybe going to work for somebody.
Yeah, that's
or
huge.
Especially working for some of the larger service organizations and things that you might really, your dream might have never had to be there. And we might be able to connect some of the dreams there and keep the system alive. The solo practitioner like I was, and like so many are, I mean, when I came out of school,
that's
85%, that was it. That's going to still exist. There's going to be solo practices, especially in some of the smaller rural areas.
Right.
But the group practice and dynamic collaborative work groups doing that kind of work is the wave of the future. The young people have the skill, the knowledge, the communication skills. You know, many of the dental schools now are in that fourth year, some third year, but fourth years are going out in the communities. They're seeing volume. So the whole education process is changing,
which is good. I think it has to, right?
You know, we have to learn. And I talk to our member dentists about this all the time. We do have to learn what is the most efficient way to practice dentistry, because there are 50% of the population is not getting dental care.
Yeah.
Now, they might not all want it. So my goal is the people who want care, they can't.
Let's get them access.
We as dentists have to do that. So if we become more efficient, we have better ways of doing things. We can utilize our auxiliaries to the highest level. Those are things that we can be more efficient to do more dentistry in a cost-effective way, which is a tough thing to do with technology today.
Yep.
But technology will help be more efficient too.
No.
So it's pretty exciting to me. I wish I was.
I talk about
it
all the day. I think you're exactly right. I literally think I have to be able to. It is no time, better time to be in dentistry than right now.
Yeah.
And I say for us, it's great because of our access to education and because of technology, we can do things, we can shorten the timeline, right? What may have taken you 10 years to do, we could do in 5, you know?
Absolutely.
We have the opportunity to learn more and do more if we run after it. That's the big problem there. I really do love this mentor thing, because I think I talk to a lot of young dentists all the time, and then I talk to some older dentists or hear their kind of perspective when, you know, being around dad and talking to more dentists. And, you know, I think it's great because somewhere there's a disconnect. The senior dentist, you know, who wants to bring in an associate, they complain about not being able to find the associates.
Yeah.
the young dentists complain about not being able to find the one that wants to mentor, right?
Well, and so it's like the new ADA program.
Where are we missing this? So I commend you on that.
Yeah.
Here's a big question I have for you. This is a hot topic that we talk about all the time that seems to be where I hear the ADA probably mentioned. What is the role in the ADA and insurance and dental insurance and how that all plays together and, you know, being advocates for us, but also being advocates for, because ultimately, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the ADA is an advocate for the dentist first and foremost, right? As well as the patient.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
You know, the vision statement of the ADA is that we are people embodied to help the oral health of the public, basically. So you have to be healthy to do that. So we have to help our dentists be healthy
sure.
so that they can go do that. So it's not a self-centered base there. It's actually just giving the right tools. Now, having said that,
I realize that that's a loaded question.
Yeah.
I get that, but it's a question I think that a lot of dentists struggle with and are curious about. You know, is how does that work and how do I deal with that? Because that's a burden for a lot of dentists. Is, you know, we have increasing loans, increasing costs for what we're doing, yet insurance reimbursements lag behind.
Yeah.
They don't change as much.
And you may have, if you've recognized, you've seen across the country where third-party payers are just blatantly cutting fees 18-19% across the board. The things we can do, unfortunately, people have to understand that we have to live inside the rules of the FTC. So to band together to try and change some things there has so much scrutiny on it legally that we got to be very careful.
Okay.
But the thing that we can do, and we do this in a lot of states, I'm sure Tennessee does it, for their dentist here, is if there are insurance companies that are actually bullying through language on EOBs and things like
right.
that, we can go to the table, straight to the top of those tables and saying, look, this way you're going about your business is in fact not moral, ethical.
Right.
It's not falling in the realms of what the law should be. And we're calling you on the carpet for that. And there's been lawsuits from dental societies against third-party payers who have violated ethical rules, and they've won. Delta is paying, it just went from $36 to $56 million,
wow.
I believe, in California. California Dental Society, Dental Association filed a lawsuit on some of their unethical behaviors there. And it held up in the courts. In fact, the courts gave the reward a higher number than what was originally
wow.
asked for. And that's fresh off the... So don't quote me. You know, they always tease me if an ADA lawyer is not with me. They're
yeah, they're like, please don't start sharing numbers. No, I get that.
So, and I make them up if I don't know.
No, but that's good. I mean, I think that needs to be... That's another great added value and benefit that I think most people don't know about. And I've heard that, like, if you know, if we have an issue where we're getting bullied on a claim like that, we need to send it to the Tennessee Dental Association. We need to say, hey, that's what they're there for.
Yeah.
If we don't take advantage of the value that y'all are willing to give us, yeah. that's our fault, not yours.
You know, the EOB language, when somebody goes to a non-network dentist and on the payment stub, it says, and by the way, if you would have gone to, and they'll name names of other people in their network, you would have saved X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
That behavior is wrong. And we go to the table, we go to the war chest with that one on things like that we can do. But we are, obviously, we're in limits. The McCarran-Ferguson Act that's we're looking for Senate sponsorship now. It passed in the House to change the protection that insurance companies have to be able to work, to sit down together and control pricing and control networks. Those laws, we're looking, if we get the Senate sponsor move forward, we believe that changes. That levels the field a little bit more.
Sure.
It can open the borders across states so third-party payers can compete against each other, maybe bringing the costs down, bringing the networks up. So there's things there with third-party payers we can try to do. You know, there's little things that most members never know, like the CDT codes. That's intellectual property of the American Dental Association. Every third-party payer in the country accepts that now because those are the things we lobby for. That makes life simpler for our dentists. Now, member, non-member, you both benefit from that. But if we lobby for things like that, the more members we have, the more power we have in the voice.
Sure.
And so there's – when I keep thinking about why should I belong, you know, the young people ask me, why should I belong? And it's the connectivity. It's the ability to get information. The library of CE that we have, and millennials like to go online, the library we have is unbelievable. adjuncts to your Spear Study Club. If you go out and start to study some things, our library at the ADA is the best dental library in the world. The access that we have to things that I don't think a lot of members even have any idea that we have. There's an app that the ADA has that will show you all drug interactions. I have friends who are paying $300, $400 for apps to do that.
What's the app called?
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm going to put you on the side. That's okay. You can let me know and I'll put it in our notes.
I will.
I'll put it in our notes.
I have it in my
because that's a great,
sure.
That's a great little nugget that people can download immediately.
Yeah. And it connects the medicines that people are taking. I mean, there's so many things. I could just keep going on and on.
Sure.
The opioid crisis in America. Dentistry has taken a forefront. We're the first profession to come out and ask for mandatory education for controlled amounts of prescription amounts that are allowed to be prescribed and to belong to the monitoring system so that you know if there is a patient that's trying to come to you in a different way. We are doing so much that I think the value of the numbers are great. They really are great.
What's one of the if you had to kind of say how long, I don't know how long the terms are of president, but what would you say one of like the big things that your kind of goal is to try and accomplish or see through during your tenure?
So one of the number one things I wanted to do is keep our resources high in our science and evidence, because that's how we stay a profession. We're not a trade. We're a profession because we're learned. It's a learned profession based in science and evidence-based information.
Sure.
So I wanted to make sure that resources continued there at a high level. Our SEAL program has gotten a big new boost, and they're putting this thing as a very trusted brand. The ADA brand is strong. Consumers get it. They know
it.
So keeping us focused there. And then I really am pushing, and we're working with the deans, and ASDA to work more on this collaboration in education with medicine, with all healthcare providers, that we are part of Total Health and that new image. Take for instance the work we're doing with MD Anderson in Texas the HPV virus.
Yep.
And do you know that don't quote me on this one, but I think I saw the first state that just changed the rules so that a dentist can give a vaccination.
Wow.
And you can go into CVS and get a vaccination from the pharmacist, and yet it's against the practice acts in most states for a dentist to vaccinate. We have young families there, and the knowledge of oropharyngeal cancer and the rise in this just through the HPV virus that can be vaccinated, that can be done. If not done in the office, it can be, the message can be given to parents, take your kids there.
That's huge.
The A1C testing for diabetes, the number of people.
Well, why are we doing like that stuff? Why are we doing that? That's a no-brainer, right?
And we need to train that in education. It has to be part of the life so that a patient expects this of their dentist now, not surprised by it.
100%.
And that's how we connect.
We see that in practice with airway. I mean, we're huge on airway screening and right now because of the relationship we're seeing with that to systemic health and teeth and the oral. And it's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
I kind of bring that up, and one thing I'm seeing and I worry about is, you know, where again it's important for us to rely on y'all to help fight for us, is airway is kind of somewhat of a controversial topic between where do dentists lie on home sleep testing.
Yeah.
You know, is that crossing the boards? You know, but I think what we have is a big problem in medicine where there is a big access to care issue. You know, our general dentist counterparts and physicians are seeing way more patients than we're having to see, you know, on a daily basis. And their reimbursements are way worse, you know, than ours are. And so I think that we not only should, but I think we're going to have to play a bigger role in systemic health and airway and some of that. Talk about that.
The number of people that see the it's over 40 million people a year that see a dentist that don't have a physician. So just recognizing health issues that are a compromise, you know, undiagnosed diabetes, anything that has to do with head and neck areas that could be the signs of some other disease process thing. So these things are very, very important to be in the dental office as a Total Health facility issue. You know, primary care docs, you know, they're engulfed. They're caught up in large hospital groups now. They use, obviously, it's part of the discussion sometimes when they talk about the workforce issue in dentistry, that they use nurse practitioners and physician assistants to a much higher level in that because of the shortage of family practitioners.
And then why shouldn't they be using us?
And
to a degree, right?
Amen. Amen. That's exactly it. Because we have the ability to do that. We have the patient. They're there. And it's a message turnaround. We have to have our patients expect us to be doing this now, not surprised by it. And, you know, there's coding coming out so that, you know, it hasn't probably taken off much in dentistry because there's never been a way to be paid for it.
Right. That's 100%.
And a diagnostic test, you go to your physician, get a diagnostic test, you pay
for it. You better
be
glad you're going to pay for it.
But in dentistry right now, there hasn't been a pathway. Those are some of the connects that we're trying to do. And it's all about that collaboration. So those were high on my list because those aren't a one and out. Those are a continuation of who we are. And we have to stay after this story.
What?
And I like it.
Well, let me preface this question why I'm asking this question. Okay, so one of the big things I've seen is, so the state of North Carolina just recently passed where dentists can no longer administer home sleep tests out of their office. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
I've only cursory because it's a subject.
Yeah. But my question is how does that work with states making decisions versus the national decision making? You know, I imagine it's like the rest of the government, like where there's, you have state regulations, we have government regulations. How does that work into where, you know, obviously we want to be as unified across the board as we can. Yet I get that states need to have their own discussion, but knowing some colleagues and seeing how that's come up, if that happened in Tennessee, that would be very detrimental to a lot of patients' care that we give, right? So just wanted your thoughts kind of on something like
you
that.
You know, interesting. We 52 jurisdictions in this country, state by state by state, and that's the government form that our country's been built on. But good federal legislation. In other words, let's look at the opioid situation.
Sure.
Some of the changes that will be made federally that will be handed down to the states, the federal laws will supersede the states. But the states on that issue, I have to give them credit. State by state, people are tackling this. The legislatures are tackling, the state dental boards are tackling how we can be part of the solution as dentists there. In the sleep world, you know, and I think our policy right now, and I'm not going to go word for word, but the policy right now, when you get involved in sleep studies, it's been documented scientifically that for some people, especially with the apnea issues, that a dental appliance can do good things.
100%.
So it's part of a treatment process. Our policy right now says the sleep study is done in a physician's office. It's a practice of medicine. But then the dentist can then take over the treatment if that's the way it goes. In fact, many physicians will say, let's try your dentist first.
Sure.
Depending on the severity. Now, the other thing that I think has just been recently connected that's strong is just like with snoring things. Not every person who snores or not every person who has some issues necessarily have sleep apnea.
100%.
So dentists, that's the training, should be able to pick out who those people are and try something maybe with the dentist being the conduit to help a problem.
Right.
But if somebody is obese and they have these issues and you can watch them breathe on it, you know, it's in our best interest to say, look, do you have a doctor?
Yeah.
No, I don't. You know, you really need to go. Let's take your blood pressure. You know, let's see this. You know, let me take
a test
right
now. For them.
Exactly. And that's the relationship that you need to have. And our physician friends, were asking them to do the same thing. You know, look in their mouth. If somebody has trouble, you ask them, do they have a dentist?
Yeah.
And the answer is no. And then you go to Find a Dentist in America, the American Dental Association,
right.
Find a Dentist. And you say, where do you live? Boom, boom, boom. Here's six dentists within 10 miles. Find one. You need to go to the dentist.
Sure.
And those are all part of that issue. You know, the sleep dentistry thing is pretty interesting. It's really a new world in a way. I almost thought when I'm done with this presidency, maybe I go get trained to the highest level in how dentistry fits into sleep dentistry. And that might be a little niche that I can go
back to Andy and say
I could help him.
Well, I don't know if you know Dr. Jeff Roush. He's over at Spear.
Yeah,
he's a lot there. I've interviewed him before. And he thinks it's really cool because he kind of says that over the next 5-10 years, sleep dentistry is really going to be what crosses that bridge and takes us across the aisle to medicine, where we finally start to work together, you know, because it really requires us to work together.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty exciting thing because for really history, we haven't really aligned very well in regards to that.
You know, and the education process too. There's quite a few dental schools now that are doing collaborative training.
Which is awesome.
On diagnosing and things. And they're bringing the nurses in. so that they're recognized issues, and it's good stuff. It's the way, it's where we need to be.
100%.
And, you know, we're not going to make dental disease. We're not going to drill our way out of dental disease.
Agreed.
So the whole preventive side of this thing, you know, we just have to make people aware. We have to help solve some of the access issue. Dentistry has to step up. I'm not sure how we're going to do that yet, other than begging and asking. But charity is not a healthcare system.
Sure. No,
we have Moms Projects. We have these great things, but it's not an end all. And so we just have to work very hard to help connect that dot. That's also high on my list of leaving a cool story that says we need to be part of the solution. You know, the 800-pound elephant in the room now is a conversation around the therapist model of,
sure,
of dentistry as a workforce. And I believe that that's so narrow, and it's a solution that somebody's thrown out there for a problem when in reality there's so many better solutions to use the current dental team,
right,
in the fashion that we can. And so I'm engaged in those conversations every time I can.
Yeah.
And it's just not say no. It's say no, here's a better way. We offer solutions. That's what dentistry of the American Dental Association is looking at, these kind of things every single day, so that you and I can go home and practice.
That's awesome.
And do our things so somebody else is doing the work. The standards that are in dentistry, all of the science-based information is coming out. The American Dental Association is doing all that. And if we have members that are supporting us, we can do more. If that membership dies away, then who will do the work that,
right,
the American Dental Association
is doing? Well, and that's my you know, screaming and yelling to my people is, I totally agree.
Yeah.
We want the same things. We just have to understand that we need your help to make them happen.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't, you know, our generation doesn't want to be one-tooth cavity dentists.
Yeah.
You know, like, we want to treat the whole body. We want the bigger picture. We want to we're passionate about more than just fillings and crowns,
yeah,
right? I mean, and so we really need to lean on the resources, and I'm in full agreement.
Well, people my age want that for you, and the millennials and the new dentists, 100% of our future. We want that for you almost as much,
sure,
as you might want that.
That's awesome.
We know it's the future. We know it's the future, and we're chipping away at it. I'm actually very proud. I never saw myself as president of the American Dental Association, but my wife hates it when I say I got the bully pulpit. But for a short time, I got the bully pulpit, and I'm not afraid to step up
good
and
for
talk
you
about
good
it.
Good for you. Well, first off, Doc, thank you so much for joining us.
Well,
this is, and
you.
I really, I appreciate your transparency and honesty. You know, I know that sometimes I feel like half the time I'm interviewing people and they want to give just, you know, the political answer. And I really feel like you've been honest and transparent with us. So I know that our listeners and our generation appreciates that.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for what you're doing and look forward to seeing more.
Well, you're welcome to share my information with your
100%
listeners. I am a conduit. If I don't have the answer, I can find it for you.
For sure.
So I'm
sure
a good conduit. And then the ADA, that's everybody working at the ADA. They can find it for you.
So I would encourage everybody to, you know, check out what your state dental association's doing. If you're a student, stay in ASDA, you know, keep plugging along in that. But when you graduate, transition, take advantage of the awesome resources that the ADA has. And really, I think it's what we need to have. And it's the best part of our industry. So again,
thank
Dr.
You,
Joe Crowley, thank you so much.
Thank
this has
you.
Been a pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Everybody work harder or work smarter, not harder.
There you go.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.